Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 166.
This week on the podcast, we recount every moment you wanted to relive from the first official Republican debate. So basically all of them.
Like women who can't shut down pregnancies in cases of legitimate rape, the GOP can't seem to shut down their compulsion to make insensitive comments about women.
And Hillary's Democrats to their own base. Hey guys, is debating really the answer when we've already chosen the candidate?
Schumer comes out against the Iran deal because why not be a tool?
And like the rest of mainstream history, gay history is now popular enough to be whitewashed in film.
All that and special guest Kim Eaton.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
We are super excited because our friend Kim Eaton is here. She's been on the podcast before.
Right, you may remember her from past hits, but...
Yeah, she was
at
doing
this point
some,
a couple years ago.
It's been a while.
Yeah. She was doing some heroic tweeting during the Republican debate the other night. And so we were like, she has to come on and talk about the debate with us. And that's what we're going to start with because why wouldn't we?
What else happened this week?
Yeah. Nothing.
Nothing happened. Nothing happened. Yeah. But so much happened, really, when you just consider what Thursday night.
This was like, we were like living for this night to be upon us.
And it delivered. It lived up to all of the expectations that I had on. Like, I worried that they would try to sort of outbore each other, because sometimes in a situation where there's this many personalities, they all kind of tone it down for something like this. They did not.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, or because you think the whole point of debates is, I mean, yes, to rally your own base, but also to try to pull some people away from the other side.
Right. To look like a more reasonable choice.
Especially,
just did not happen.
Especially considering the ratings for this, which shattered already. 24 million people, which is like the highest rated cable non-sports program ever. So you would want that to maybe be like a substantive discussion amongst reasonable people, and that is not
serious
what happens.
Serious question. Is the reason that this Republican primary got away from the Republicans so dramatically, so quickly, because Fox News made it so? Like, is this whole primary a ratings game for Fox News? Because they supposedly were going to learn their lesson from the last primaries, where they've totally made fools of themselves, having 1,000 people on stage with funny haircuts, saying stupid nonsense. But they instead opted to have more people running this time and opted to have the greatest ratings in like television history.
Yeah.
Even the kitty debate had better ratings than most of television.
It did. It had 6 million people. And that was like twice as many people as watched the first debate of all the candidates in 2012.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
crazy,
didn't know
right?
That about the ratings. That's quite impressive.
No, this is a real income generator for Fox News.
But we all turned in to watch Donald Trump, obviously. Like, that's why the ratings were so good, and he really came through for us.
Yeah.
For sure.
He's no slouch.
No.
He started off with a bang. First of all, I love that the Fox News anchors seemed to be, like, really committed to, like, trying to ask hard-hitting questions, but only on certain topics that they knew would be, like, salacious, you know, news items for later. Like, they weren't really... They missed most of the important topics that are actually out there.
Well, that's true, because it was interesting because they were always saying, like, what's polling the highest? Racial issues. And it was like, well...
We're not going to talk about that.
We're not going to talk about that. So glad that you guys are aware of that, but we're not actually going to do that. But I did appreciate that, and I appreciated that the moderators actually tried to, like, take all of those candidates to task, hold them down, be like, but actually answer our questions.
Right. Yeah. Well, you were sort of like loving on Megyn Kelly. And
I
so
always
most
do.
People,
I always fangirl for Megyn Kelly. We have a really love-hate relationship. But Thursday night was mostly love.
Yeah, she came to play.
Yeah, she really did. And I also really enjoyed Chris Wallace.
He was surprisingly good.
Yeah.
Well, those are the two.
I mean, those are the two
from the entire
of the
lineup.
Yeah.
If you're looking for someone... Even just sort of vaguely
what's
reasonable.
His nuts?
Like,
it was
you go to
of no
two.
Use to anybody.
No, Brett Baer.
Brett Baer is like a...
Yeah, he's and got, he's like main guy.
He's
like
got
head honcho,
man teenager syndrome.
Yeah,
he doesn't have man child syndrome, but he looks like a football jock. Like an overgrown, wet, red-faced football jock.
Totally.
But in any case, because there were some hard-hitting questions asked, Trump got the sort of brunt of what of like some of the more direct questioning out there. And some of what he said was hilarious. It starts with him saying that he would not agree to not run an independent campaign if he doesn't get the nomination.
Right.
That's like, they're like Republicans are lockstepers. Like, this is crazy to me that they've lost such control that the guy who's leading in the polls for them is like not agreeing to do the gentlemanly thing and
no,
like step down.
Well, he's clearly a self-serving dude. Where it's like, there are moments where he does not fall in line with certain platform issues. He's like,
and he doesn't try to pretend that he will. Because normally what you do in this situation is you say that you would never run an independent campaign.
Yeah,
and then you just do it anyway.
Like, that's right. That's what Bernie Sanders has done. I mean, I sort of tend to believe him that he won't probably. But I mean, like, a lot of people were worried about him because he's an actual independent.
Right.
Lest we forget. Yeah. But he's come out pretty strongly, you know, saying that he's, you know, not going to run a third party candidacy. But anyway.
Kim's phone is starting to do it.
So sorry. Yeah.
No, it's okay.
In any case,
I'll show myself out.
So Donald Trump begins by being the only person to raise his hand when they ask whether people will be willing to step out of the race if they don't win the primary.
Right.
Then gets held down on that whole on the women's misogynistic comments, where he somehow doubles down on misogyny while insisting that he's not a misogynistic prick. Like,
right.
In what was one of the most, like, double-talky, weird moments of television out there.
Only to later, in, like, post-conversations, be like, oh, that Megyn Kelly, obviously, clearly on the rag, because she won't leave me alone about these things. So like, well, thanks for proving my point of calling women, like, animals and slobs. So, yes, on the rag, thanks a lot.
Totally.
Yeah. So he begins by doubling down on just, like, pure misogyny.
Yeah.
He then admits to having paid off basically everyone on the stage and most of the Democratic, like, field of life.
Right, well, because they asked him about that, because he's given money to Hillary Clinton, and so
Nancy
they were sort
Pelosi,
of like...
Nancy Pelosi,
right,
and he was wedding.
Right.
Yeah, and he was like, well, I want them to do shit for me.
Yeah,
so what
which
if I
think probably won him the most points with anyone. Like, when I watched that, I was like, this is what his, like, rabid people are looking for. It's not what Americans in general want to know about how the political system works. It's a little bit disturbing.
Right.
But it is what his sort of rabid crazies that are supporting him want to hear.
Well, that and, you know, racism against...
And racism, which was there too.
Right, and he really...
He went to town talking about the wall.
He did.
And
how he's going to make it beautiful.
It's going to be, and there's going to be a beautiful door in the wall. Yes.
I mean, I can maybe actually get behind this wall now that I know it's going to be like
beautiful wall.
Travertine marble, probably, and gold, and yeah.
It's going to be a black marble wall.
Yeah.
No one's sold it to me the way that Donald Trump has ever sold it to me before.
Yeah.
So now
I'm
kind of into it.
Aesthetic.
I might myself be switching parties. I don't know.
He also, though, got asked, like, he got asked about his past support for single payer. He got asked about the fact that he used to be pro-choice. Like, because basically, he used to be a Democrat. He used to publicly advocate for positions that he is now pretending that he has been called to stop supporting. Like, when they asked him why he was no longer pro-choice, he, like, gave a confusing story about how he knew someone who didn't have an abortion and then the baby grew up to be a lovely person, and so that somehow showed that abortion was wrong. And I was like, even if I were pro-life, I don't know if I'd be buying this. Like, that's not the answer. You talk about killing babies. That's, I mean, everyone knows how to...
Right, Marco Rubio knew that.
Marco Rubio knew too much. He knew about also wanting raped women to have those babies. He cared about the babies that much. But, yeah, Donald Trump didn't seem to, like, know how to answer these things. He accidentally supported single payer while telling everyone that he was not going to support single payer. Like, it was a confusing time for him to explain his positions on things.
And then he threw it over on Rand Paul, who, like, tried to call him out. And he's like, you know you're on the side of single payer. And he's like... I don't know what you're talking about. You're clearly having a difficult time with this, Rand Paul.
Yes.
I was like, so what's happening? We all know. We all know the truth, Donald.
Well, because he was like, he got asked about it, and he, instead of just saying that I've changed my mind and blah, blah, blah for business, blah, 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 was like, no, I'm absolutely against single payer now, but then went on to describe a system that was oddly similar to single payer as his preferred plan.
Well, and,
I was like, well, if that's the choice, I would certainly prefer that plan too.
His initial answer too was so good, because the Republicans are always talking about how they want to repeal and replace. Like, that's their tagline, but then they don't know what they want to replace it with.
Right,
and so he said
he wanted to replace it with single payer, basically.
Right, but before he even explained what single payer was and said it wasn't single payer, he said he wanted to repeal and replace it with something fantastic.
That's right. Which I
agree.
I need to that.
Love,
let's repeal Obamacare and replace it with something fantastic. Let's repeal all the laws and replace them with something fantastic.
Yeah, we're all in accordance.
That's his platform.
Let's all repeal Obamacare
fantastic
and replace it with something
laws.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
where it's like drugs fall out of the sky.
Right.
And just where it's like, do you
don't
cancer?
Even have to
well,
go to
cancer
the doctor.
Drugs are now falling out of the sky. Let's just take it. Yeah, great. Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm into fantastic laws of any sort.
Done.
Yeah.
That's,
mm-hmm.
That
done.
Wins. Yeah.
A fantastic platform.
He also
Democrats,
tried to...
Republicans, fantastic.
Yeah. We finally have a political party that believes what we believe.
Fantastics.
Right.
Fantastics
party. Now on off Broadway.
Exactly. He also denied that he had ever gone personally bankrupt. Because they asked about his bankruptcies, because he's gone, his company's gone bankrupt like 4 times.
Yeah.
And you know who pays for it when you go bankrupt?
We do.
Taxpayers.
We do. Yeah.
So
we do.
When you act like you don't believe in public assistance for anyone, but you've gone bankrupt 4 times, that raises some questions, at least to Chris Wallace.
Well, and this is the thing that I think seemed the most, like, this was, I think, his, at least for me, his worst moment.
Oh,
outside
of,
obviously, like, the situation with Megyn Kelly, which we're sort of going to
But even that,
even
he was sort of feeding the base with that, because they're misogynistic pricks, too. So
right, exactly. But we already, but even the Republicans sort of, like, you know, like, the Tea Party wing and all of those people, like, they're mad on some level about income inequality. And, like, we all know that he's a rich person, and I think that we think that that's, Republicans think that that's okay because they think that, yeah, he's made
He knows
it.
How to be
but,
rich.
Like,
he knows
so
how to...
The how regular Americans can't use these laws like rich people can. And I feel like he just seems more like he is able to take advantage of the system that so many regular Americans don't have the ability to take advantage of. And that, I think, is where the disconnect with him being rich is. Most Republicans don't mind that he's rich, but they mind that he is sort of able to work the system in ways that they aren't able to work the system. Like, poor people can't work the system like he can.
The one answer where he got very defensive and accusatory because he was very much like, well, everyone else is doing this too. It's not just me. Everyone's doing it. And I was like, yes, but like...
Every rich person is doing it.
And also, this is the point where you say no one should be doing
this. No one should be able to.
No one should be able to do this. And he never quite made that point.
Yeah.
So he kind of missed the boat on that. Whereas I think with some of these other issues, he didn't. I mean, when we talk about like political corruption, like he really didn't miss the boat on that one. He very much was like, this is a problem that I was able to buy off all of these people. Everyone on the stage got money from me, to which Ben Carson said no. And I was like, well,
what office was he in?
Like, when did he think he was going to get money from you? Like, what?
Right.
But I mean,
it's like a personal check or something.
I mean, like, hey, I'm Donald Trump and you don't look rich enough. Like what, what kind of check was he expecting? But I mean, with that, he really got to the point. And he did not get to the point on this bankruptcy thing, and then also tried to deny that he had gone bankrupt, which is the most famous thing about him. If there's one thing we all know about Donald Trump, it's that he's gone bankrupt in big ways multiple times.
God bless him.
That's the survivor. Did you know that in Florida they call Jeb Bush Jeb?
Because he earned it.
Because he earned it.
What does that mean, Kim Eaton? Expert on debating.
Don't look at me.
That was like such a confounding moment of
Jeb exclamation point. I feel like you guys aren't saying it with enough verb. I need Jeb from you. Jeb.
So he's trying to just make sure that all of America can call him Jeb.
Vito Corleone.
Thing that they're
my favorite
thing that they're currently capable of doing by being Americans and having words in their mouth.
Outside of that, though, I don't remember him for anything.
Well, he didn't do a damn thing.
Yeah, he was kind of a sleeper, right?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, he...
Or sleepy, not a sleeper.
He wasn't a sleeper, because he didn't spring out at any point and surprise us. He just stayed asleep.
He didn't bust out in Spanish, which I was hoping for.
I love it when the Bushes speak Spanish. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I can hear their Texan accent when they do it, too. Like, I can hear them... You know how sometimes you can hear people having a bad accent who absolutely should not have a bad accent in Spanish? Like, I can hear their foreign language accents, which I can't always do. I'm not a Spanish speaker. I don't know what accents sound like in Spanish.
Yeah.
He also, though, looked a little bit just like deer in headlights-y. He looked very much like W. Jr. to me.
Well, you and I have talked a lot about like how, you know, everybody seems to think that he's the smart Bush, but like I feel like you can really see the hamsters, you know,
literally
going
the dumb
on in his brain. He's no genius.
No, the man's not
all.
A genius. He somehow looked more sort of like childish, like his glasses made him look cross-eyed or something, and he had like a weird sort of like, you know, not like he just looked like a little kid in two big glasses, and like he looked shrunken a little, and he kind of just like
he's the tallest one too.
And he was the tallest one, and he looked like the shortest one.
You looked that up.
What's that? No, I just remember them all standing there, and I was like, oh, he's tall,
right? Or they're all short.
Well,
it didn't look like it wasn't.
Rand Paul was like a miniature person. He's very clearly shorter than everybody else.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But there was no standout Mitt Romney kind of tall-ish, tall rich person.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, Kasich was an interesting study because He got the audience to clap wildly for all sorts of very progressive policies.
I was very shocked. I was like, maybe I don't actually know who's in this audience. Because they were clapping for gay marriage. Right. And then he was like, yes, I did accept the Medicaid.
Right. You know, and they got very excited about that.
What's happening? Who's in this audience? They're ringers. Well, they're clearly ringers in this audience.
Well, Ohioans, for one, were in the audience.
Right.
And two, people who like free healthcare were in the audience, which is all people.
And it's people
Republicans
who, not only people who like it, people who are receiving it.
Republicans claim they don't like it, but then once they get it, they're like, oh, well, this is great.
Yeah.
I mean, so, the ones in Congress sure like it.
Bingo.
Exactly. There's not a person out there who does not like personally receiving health care for free. There are a lot of people who don't like it that other people are personally receiving health care for free.
Right.
That's what the Republican Party is.
Like the other nine.
Like
on the
other, exactly.
And the other seven in the debate earlier in the day.
But yeah, that was a surprise just because I couldn't then figure out. The audience was acting very confusing. They would cheer wildly for Trump sometimes, but he also got a fair number of like harsh boos.
Yeah.
For saying racist things that I would think that normally Republicans would kind of
they
cheer
would
for.
Yeah.
It was a confusing time for all. Rand, I feel like, got short shrift in the coverage of the debate because he was a real shit starter and everyone gave everyone else credit for all of his shit.
I thought that he did a good job, and that's maybe because just if I was forced at gunpoint to vote for any of the 17 of them, it would probably be him. So maybe I was just sort of like gravitating to him, you know, being generally reasonable. But he also sort of, people have expected more of him. So like a lot of people were saying going into the debate that he's going to have to sort of like come out swinging, and I thought he sort of
did.
He started immediately with the whole, when the Trump hand went up at the beginning.
Yeah, he started
he immediately chimed
everyone.
In and was like, "Oh, well, you used to be a Democrat. Maybe you'll support Hillary Clinton. You've given her money." Blah. And like, I was like, "All right, he's sort of going for it here."
I felt like he really performed, and no one talked about it. He got into an actual shouting match with Chris Christie.
That was one of my.
I thought it was going to end in a knife fight.
I know.
I felt like
the split
I could
screen
respect yes. somebody who could both be like a person who can sound, he doesn't sound reasonable, but he can talk to people like they're regular people.
Are we talking Chris Christie?
No, Rand Paul.
Oh, Rand Paul.
Rand Paul can be a regular person, but he was able to take on a Chris Christie. Chris Christie can take on a Chris Christie, but he can't talk to regular people. Like, he sounds like an asshole when he talks to regular people. And so I was sort of surprised that Rand didn't get sort of more credit for, I thought he kind of held his own in debate with Chris Christie pretty well.
Yeah.
Chris Christie, by the way, starting shit with everyone.
Yeah.
And saying things that weren't actually true.
And saying inaccurate statements. Yeah.
Yeah.
He talked a lot about 9/11, because that's his... Yeah. He's
who
trying
doesn't?
To be the Giuliani of this cycle. Right. He's trying to talk about how many hugs he gave out on 9/11 and what the quality of his hugs
were. There was a big debate about hugs.
A lot of people were just in general trying to... And even in the undercard debate, we're just talking about 9/11. And I was a governor during 9/11.
Jim Gilmore kept reminding us that he was the governor of Virginia during 9/11.
Yeah, I was like... Well, clearly, all of us were something.
And then George Pataki was like, "Why was the governor of New York during 9/11?"
Yeah.
And it was like, "Ooh, snap."
Yeah, don't.
But, I mean, like, they were all, you know, arguing over who was, you know, the most important during 9/11. It was like,
that was 14 years ago.
It's still a hot button issue,
apparently.
I mean, it always. Well, don't get me wrong. For always will be a big deal. But I was like,
is the quality of your hugs more important?
Yeah.
Well, I just imagine after 9/11. Like Chris Christie with like a cardboard sign, like a Sharpie that says free hugs, because 9/11.
I know.
Well, because he got called out on his Obama.
Obama. And that
hugging.
Was Rand called out.
And that was Rand who called him out. And then he was like, what I remember is the hugs of the, you know. Fallen.
I mean, I did actually find that to be a little obnoxious. And I will say, as a person who would be the last one to go to the mat for Chris Christie, myself being a New Jersey native, I will be the last one to go to the mat for him. But I was like, well, Rand, what do you expect him to do? Hurricane Sandy, big deal.
But
people are still
a major talking point.
It really is. But it's like, what would you have them do? Like, okay, fine. Are they all going to like live in your house, Rand?
He was supposed to say no to federal money and show them that New Jersey has the gumption.
We can do it on our own. I mean, I guess we'll all make each other casseroles, but if we could also get federal money, I think that would make more
sense.
Also,
once you've cut taxes and services to the degree that you can't take care of it on your own because you're Chris Christie, you need the federal money in order to make sure people aren't dying for no reason of a huge catastrophe.
But also,
eventually people will notice.
Right, exactly.
And I'm just going to say, you know, unlike, you know, where if when this happened years before in New Orleans, it was like, well, but you're like, well, when this happens in New Jersey, people right. will notice. Right.
Yeah, because there will be New Jerseyans in New York, and New Yorkers will be mad.
Well, and the other thing about this Chris Christie thing with 9/11 is that he declared that he had been appointed by George W. Bush, the U.S. attorney, on September 10th of 2001. And this is like, what are the odds? He's been telling the story for a long time, actually, too. Yeah. And it's not true.
It's not a true story, guys.
His own website says that he
was nominated in December, P.S. Right. That's post 9/11 for those of you math checkers.
Because it's September, October, November, December.
Exactly.
Got it.
10 months work.
And he didn't take office until 2002.
Which is the year after 9/11.
That's what his bio on his website for president says.
This is what his own bio tells us.
so
unless
that's
he himself has miswritten his bio to include things that are less politically convenient than the stories he's now telling.
He hasn't.
Also, Chris Christie earlier this week just had like a ton of gaffes anyway.
Oh yeah.
Like Chris Christie.
Well, not necessarily gaffes, but just disgusting things.
Well, disgusting. Well, there was sort of they were gaffes in political.
Sure.
Theater. They were not gaffes in he meant to say them. He described his use of birth control and not just the rhythm method earlier this week.
Like, we don't want to be thinking about Chris Christie having sex in any circumstance.
He's
a Catholic, so people asked him, it was like at a town hall event or something like that.
Right.
He was like, I've used birth control, not just the rhythm method. Like, no.
I would like to think that his strongest form of birth control is his personality. I'm just going to go with that. That's my theory.
And his inability to sit in a rolling office chair.
Oh, that's right. Have you seen that?
You know I have. Because there's a vine, and my mom watches it, like, every day to, like, get her day going, because she's not a coffee drinker. But she, that's how she gets it
done. That's how you get your day going. He also said that he wanted to punch teachers, and the teachers union deserves a punch in the face.
Right, he got asked who deserves a punch in the face.
Yes, don't be the kind of person. It was based on something that he used to say in his first term a lot, which was you can either sidle up to bullies or you can punch them in the face.
Yeah.
And so on CNN, he got asked who he'd punch in the face first.
Teachers.
That's who. Infecting our children with knowledge like a bunch of assholes.
How dare you put them down a path?
Exactly.
To learning about the world.
He's mad because the AFT has already come out for Hillary.
Right.
And so
we're mad about that.
Mad about that too.
Maybe Kim's mad.
Right. But Randy Weingarten obviously immediately jumped on this and tried to sort of
Randy
spin
with
it.
An eye, right?
Randy with an eye. Randy with an eye. He also got into it with Mike Huckabee in a way where we almost saw a shred of the former Mike Huckabee, and then it all fell apart so fast.
Well, Kim, I don't know if you know, but Lila and I, early before this primary even started, declared that Mike Huckabee was going to win this primary.
Right.
And it was because we felt like Republican populist.
Right.
But he hasn't
his
gone that
route.
Campaign, he's gone the Mike Huckabee of, like, insane Christian, like, lunatic.
Yeah. Right.
And that is not the winning strategy.
That's not the correct
Mike
Huckabee.
So he toyed with the Huckabee of old in this argument about Social Security, which also was one of your genius.
Oh, Lord.
So basically, Chris Christie wants to mostly just get rid of Social Security. He's claiming that we're running out of money and there's nothing we can do and it's all over. And is not open to the math that, you know, if you just take more money into Social Security, you can then also have enough money in Social Security. Like, there's, like, math missing in his assessment of Social Security.
Yeah.
So Mike Huckabee made an amazing point, and then instead of doubling down on his amazing point, made a contradictory point that ruined his amazing point. Because basically, they got into a big argument about cutting Social Security. Now, if you're a Republican out there in the world, you should know that you don't talk about cutting Social Security. People hate that. It's like, you know, we likened it in years past to, in Britain, you can't talk about cutting the NHS. You can secretly cut the NHS through all sorts of secret Republican-y measures, but you can't talk about how you're doing it. People like the NHS. Same thing goes for Social Security here. So Chris Christie's going on about how we're going to have to cut Social Security, and Mike Huckabee says that we shouldn't cut Social Security. People depend on it. It's absolutely unfair to expect that everyone pay into Social Security and then not get anything out of it, and that there's a simple solution, which is that there's a lot of because Social Security only is taxed, only salaries and wages get taxed for Social Security. So if you, like, your capital gains don't get taxed for Social Security. So he was basically like, the problem is that unearned income is not taxed.
Yeah.
Which was a brilliant point, because that is true. Mm-hmm. People who are rich people make their living on unearned income.
Right.
That's what they do, and that's not being taxed for Social Security. So it's really disingenuous to pretend like we don't have the money out there.
Right.
It's just that people aren't making it through the mechanism that they need to be taxed for it. So Chris Christie obviously lost his shit and was like, you know, that's not true, and it's broken, and we have, you know, we can't do anything. It's dead. We might as well give up. But then Mike Huckabee was like, and that's why I've introduced a plan to tax sales for Social Security, which is the opposite of taxing unearned income, because it's regressive. Like, Mike Huckabee almost got there. He almost had an idea that was almost the right idea, where he was almost like, that's basically, taxing unearned income would be tantamount to raising the cap, which is what you need to do. You only get taxed on your first, like, $250,000 of income for Social Security. Really rich people don't make their money that way anyway. If you raise the cap, you can tax people who make $1 million for Social Security more than you can tax someone who makes $250,000. You can pay for it for, like, the whole universe. You can pay for Martians to have Social Security under that system. But in any case, he almost got there. Taxing capital gains would be a brilliant strategy, and then he didn't. Instead, he went the sales tax route, which is so disappointing because we almost had the Mike Huckabee of yore. The Mike Huckabee that could have won this primary. Because, P.S., a lot of the things that he would have had to align himself with in order to win this primary are things that are pulling Trump really high.
Yes, exactly.
So, in any case.
He didn't bust out his guitar, which I missed.
Oh, I know.
I like when he,
Yeah.
Yeah, because he really connects when that happens.
He does. He's really... Looks That's like true. A giant singing teddy bear.
Yeah.
Ben Carson thinks that would like to vote.
Wait, hold on. I should not. We don't know. We have to talk about what was it that Huckabee said about the prostitutes and the.
So he said illegals, prostitutes, and pimps. And then I was so confused because I have to admit, because I was trying to really focus on the debate and I was also doing work at the same time. And then all I heard were buzzwords. Illegals, prostitutes, and pimps, blah blah blah, Social Security. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that's not what they're living off of. I don't think, I'm so confused. What's happening?
And then so pimps living off Social Security.
And I was like alone in my office, and I was like, there's nobody to play this back for me. I have to wait for like at least an hour for like all of the media outlets to catch up and like give me that, you know, video again. And it was...
So we got to hear Mike Huckabee say the words illegals, prostitutes, and pimps. Yeah, he's the guy who brought up pimps, the only one to bring up pimps.
Oh, God,
can we just talk about how even the Fox News anchors were using the term illegals instead of undocumented people?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they were using the, like, insulting term for being undocumented. I'm surprised that the anchors were doing it. Just because I feel like, sure, these candidates, they're not going to get the undocumented vote, you know?
No, I was going to say.
Not that anyone can, but I mean,
they can call
them any,
not that anyone can. I know, right?
But they can use any slur that they want.
We just call you the nopes.
Right. but I was surprised that even like Megyn Kelly was using the term illegals. Because that's a really, like, inartful term.
Yeah, you're not.
You know, like, you're not supposed to say it.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
And that's, that's like a slur. So, anyway.
Yeah.
I was surprised. Anyway, Ben Carson would like your vote, and here's why. He has a brain.
That's right.
He has a brain. But Megyn Kelly wanted to make sure that people questioned that. That was my favorite.
Yeah.
Because the first thing out of the box was Megyn Kelly was like, so you're a neurosurgeon, so you deal with brains a lot, but you, like, don't actually have one. It's basically what she said. And I was like, okay, oh, so it's going to be that kind of night? Great.
Yeah, that was one of her early standouts.
That was a good job,
He was basically questioned about how he has no foreign or domestic policy qualifications of any sort.
This is a man who was running for president based on, like, one speech that he gave, like, at
the
prayer breakfast.
Yeah.
I mean, truly. Like,
truly. No, that's his rise, his meteoric rise to fame was based entirely on one speech that he gave.
Yeah.
His sort of, like, qualification that he touted as the reason that he could be president is because he is capable of learning new facts.
I don't know that. To be fair, I feel like that sets him apart from nine other people you may have heard of recently.
No, it's true.
He also, though, in proving that he doesn't know any facts, currently called Hillary the epitome of the progressive left.
Well, that's a curious.
That was a curious, like, that's not putting the brain to good use. He's had all the chances to find out what's happening in the presidential race he himself is running in.
Yeah.
And that's not what's happening. But so in any case, I mean, obviously they tried to vilify Clinton. They basically called her the presumed nominee repeatedly throughout.
Except Ben did not. That was my favorite. Basically, everyone was sort of catering and tweaking their responses towards Hillary being sort of the uncontested Democratic nominee. And Ben Carson was basically like, okay, guys. And I was like, wait,
Ben sees what's going on.
So we were all like, does Ben feel the burn?
Maybe. Maybe the more new facts he learns, the more he'll find that he feels the burn.
He hasn't yet learned
a lot of the facts.
The more facts he learns, he's going to be in the Democratic primary pretty soon.
It's like, how does his brain fit in that head? Because it's constantly growing.
But he did indicate, he is the only person on the stage, or was the only person on the stage, who's separated Siamese twins.
It's true.
Which he did bring up. Yeah. So that's correct. Important to know.
He's not wrong. That did not need to be fact-checked.
Nope.
That's like the one thing.
That's the one thing we all know is true. Yeah. Thanks to Cuba Gooding Jr.'s excellent portrayal of him in that TV movie.
Oh my God.
He's also the only one who's probably had a Cuba Gooding Jr. biographical movie made about his life.
I feel like that's
fair. We don't need to fact check that.
No. I would say, because like we say, you know, when it's sort of like the primaries and everything, that's more about speaking to your base. But I know that they all really want to do that minority outreach. And I was like, you're really nailing it with the candidates. You really are. Minority outreach. I know that when a minority watches this debate, they'll be like, I see myself in so many of these candidates.
Did you see, Ben Carson was the only person that even asked about anything having to do with, like, diversity in the party.
And
he was basically like, I don't talk about race.
Well, there was that moment when my queen, Megyn Kelly, was like, hey, Scott Walker, hashtag Black Lives Matter.
Oh, I know.
And he was like,
I know.
And, like, she didn't ask anyone else. And he was like,
I know.
And then they were, like, moving right along. And I was like, well, I mean, I definitely tensed up. And I was like, where is this going to go? But thankfully we moved through it.
Right.
Which is weird because, for the most part, I would like some hard, concrete answers about that. But at the same time, I was like, I'm not prepared for that yet. You know, for those of us living on the West Coast, it's only 6 o'clock. I've not had a drink yet. I'm not prepared. Yeah.
Speaking of Scott Walker, though, where was he in this debate, by the way? Because he's
a nerd in the corner.
He's like a darling of the base.
Yeah.
Guys, did anyone else feel like his face looked melted?
He looked weird.
You mean compared to Ted? Well, good old Eduardo Cruz? Like, how do you...
Ted just looked... Both of them were people that I don't know that I've ever spent a lot of time watching talk. I've seen them sort of like in photos. I've seen them in clips, but I've never seen them like deliver a full sentence.
He does look mid-sneeze like all the time.
Like all the time.
He does.
And like Ted Cruz, if you don't take his picture from the right angle, has like a weird chin situation that also is very distracting.
What was your tweet about him?
I forget about chin. Scott Walker. Oh, about Ted Cruz?
Yeah.
Oh, that's where he was stockpiling enriched Iran's enriched uranium. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. Cruz, Walker, and Rubio all had like weird sort of like face things going on. Because Rubio, you forget, has like hilariously large ears.
He does.
And he's like a good looking guy who just happens to have enormous ears, so it's very distracting.
Yeah.
He has man-child syndrome too, so that's another concern
He is young. I think he's the youngest.
Yeah, he is the youngest.
But he looks like he doesn't know what he's talking about because he looks so young.
Right. I actually think that he's good. Though, I think.
Yeah, he did a good job.
I thought he did a good job.
And aside from wanting to make all the women have their rapist babies.
Right. Which
the base loves.
The base loves. But they don't love women. He's doing something interesting, which he did sort of like throughout the night whenever he got asked about anything. He's not sort of like playing like the left-right thing. He sort of is like playing the past-future thing.
Mm,
he talked a lot about like, and I think that is because he is the younger one.
Right.
But I think that like, that's smart though. He's trying to frame everything in a way that is sort of like where we need to go, like how I'm going to take you there, as opposed to sort of like getting really into sort of like his like, you know, insane policy positions, I guess.
Right.
But like, I feel like that's sort of like, at least in terms of like a broad discussion, is probably the way to go, and I think works for him. And a lot of people thought that he did a good job, and I think that's probably why.
I also found him to be relatively relatable. I know I don't agree with his policies, but at least the way that he conveyed them, the way that he came across, was much more respectful and like much more diplomatic than a lot
and
of the candidates.
He did a good job of looking like a non-insane person. Like he's up on stage with a guy who looks like he has a cloud covering his face because Donald Trump's hair was like weird and feathery, and like he's got Ted Cruz
and
looking
like
a crazy person.
I feel like he's fairly. He's a good politician, I think, too. I think he learns quickly. He's smart. They interviewed him on Meet the Press this morning after the debate, and they followed up with this abortion response, right. because a lot of people were sort of like, is he too crazy on abortion to sort of like, you know, relate to the rest of the country? And I thought he had a brilliant answer where he was like, I would support any law that made it more difficult for a woman to have an abortion. Now, we on the left obviously would disagree with that, but like he kind of backtracked, but not in a way that like seemed like he was backtracking. And he also like then was like, I understand how sometimes, like, if you're a 15-year-old girl and you are pregnant, like, I can understand how that would be, like, a tough choice for you. Like, he, I think, is smart and, like, generally well-spoken, like, when he sort of, you know...
When it gets down to the real issues.
Yeah, and he is sort of, like, the one who recently, I think I put in my notes at some point, was, like, is the most scary for me, I guess.
Yeah.
Sort of. Like, I can see him being... Again, like, being a young person, being a Hispanic person, like, running against a potential old white lady, Hillary Clinton. Mm. Like, that to me is, like, a little on the scary side, I guess. Because, like, I think he's good.
Yeah.
He is, because I feel he does reach into that base. He gets them excited, but he also doesn't sound like a nut job. He also sounds like he could speak with other world leaders, which is something that I think that debate was clearly lacking. And, well, because the thing was, when I looked at, say, for example, Kasich, to me, I was like, oh, he kind of reminds me a little bit of my boo, John Huntsman, from 2012. And I was like, which means, good luck, friend. We will not be seeing you soon. Makes me very sad.
Yeah.
But you're right. When it comes to Marco Rubio, it's like, he's sort of like a little less like reaching to that center. But at the same time, he sounds like something other people could get behind.
I see him, though, at some point having a fall from grace. Because he is smart, but he's not that smart. He's not that good of a performer. He's already bungled the State of the Union response once.
Yeah.
He's not that interesting. And when he is interesting, it's about wackadoodle ideas, like that women should have rapist babies.
Yeah.
Like, I think that he maybe in that debate looked like the most real person. Because he was in a clown car of everyone in there was like insane.
Yeah.
And so on that scale, I think that he maybe wins that, but I don't think that he's smart enough to avoid talking about the things that make him truly crazy.
Yeah, that's true.
Which
he's a good VP
because he's inexperienced.
If he loses,
yeah, he'd be a great VP candidate, but he's an inexperienced politician in a lot of respects. His inexperience often shows.
Sometimes he seems a little green. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my god, that question about God.
Oh my god.
Did everyone love that?
Loved.
So good. Had the candidates heard from God what their first act in office would be?
Yeah.
Not just did they hear from their brains, did God guide them towards a first...
Which is cool, because that makes being president a lot easier.
If
you're just a vessel for a higher power.
Sure.
Cool.
Yeah. Right.
And they had time to talk about that, but not time to talk about a lot of issues that are actually real things, such as income inequality, climate change, criminal justice reform, which Rand would have
slayed them on. Well, and that's the thing.
But they didn't want to talk about the things that made these candidates unique, because they were trying not to make it look like they had that much of a lack of unity in the party, I think.
Well, that's
these questions were tailored specifically to make sure that they looked unified.
I agree. I think there was a general sort of like lack of substance in this
debate.
Oh, yeah. And that is, I think, that's the moderators and Fox News sort of in general's fault, I think, because like they didn't talk about any of the things that like you just mentioned, and I realize those aren't necessarily things that are like, you know, huge issues to the right, but on some level,
but
like,
also
when you have that many millions of people watching, and they had to have known that they were probably going to have that many people, or at least a lot of people watching, I think they really sort of like did a disservice. And even, you know, Hugh Hewitt, who is a Republican talk show host who was on Meet the Press this morning, he was like, the GOP lost this debate as a whole. I mean, partly because Donald Trump was acting like a crazy person and he's winning in the polls, but also because they really didn't talk about much, you know, substance.
But this is, they don't have any substance to talk about. I think Fox News knows that better than anyone.
Right.
But they're the ones providing the platform to these people.
But even Donald Trump, I assume, probably would have, like, enjoyed talking about
TPP, like maybe something like that,
free trade, because that's a thing that he's like talking about.
But
I think Rand Paul probably would have liked talking about that. I think Rand Paul probably would have liked talking more about the Iran deal than got talked about. I think there are a lot of people who sort of would have appreciated having time to speak about some of the things that are sort of important
but
to the population right now, and they didn't get to it.
What the party wants at all, because when they talk about these issues, they highlight the degree to which none of those people on the stage fit any sort of mold that has anything to do with the Republican Party. Like, ultimately, this was a thing that was about attacking people for things that they had said before. Yeah. And that needed to be done in Donald Trump's case because America needed to be reminded that he had said just basically everything that he's ever said. but because of that, they didn't really get a chance to talk about any real issues. And they also sort of neglected to mention things that are actual trendy issues right now that they're not talking about. Like we said, they didn't mention anything about Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. They didn't mention anything about police violence at all. That's like all the news is
Rand
talking about.
Rand would have liked talking about that probably.
Exactly. I mean, he talks a lot about incarceration. They didn't talk about foreign policy because they knew that was a rabbit hole, I'm sure. I mean, once they start talking about the Iran deal, we're in Benghazi up to our eyeballs, and there's nothing that we can do about it.
Like, they actually spoke about it. Like, I feel a little bit more in the undercard debate than they did.
Oh, they
in,
did
like,
actually.
Yeah, they did, actually. They totally got very into that.
Yeah,
and all of how Carly Fiorina knows everyone in the Middle East.
She
gets phone calls from everyone in the Middle East. She just knows everyone.
She knows them all.
Really excited me.
She's social.
Like, everyone. I was like, her night and weekend minutes must be off the charts.
Totally.
But in any case, because of that, because there was no substance, probably, an interesting phenomenon emerged in terms of who was perceived as having won these debates.
Yeah, well, it's what's interesting is that the people who, the punditry class has sort of decided who won, but that isn't necessarily jiving with the polling post-debate. So everybody seemed to think that Fiorina was the winner of that early debate. And Kim, you and I were talking before this. I mean, I thought she did fine, but she was also sort of like on a stage with like either people that you hadn't heard of or people who are like actual like certifiable people who need to be like in a padded room.
I feel like some of them just happen to be walking by the Quicken Loans Arena and they were like, do you want to come be in this debate? And they were like, cool.
Yeah, I remember that.
I didn't find her
God
to be
bless Jim Gilmore.
So brilliant. Exactly. Yeah.
Bless his heart.
Yeah. But everybody seems to think that she won that debate. Right. Megyn Kelly even mentioned her in the intro at the
which means
the prime
see
time
you
debate.
At the next debate.
Yeah, exactly.
But this really did wonders for her numbers, didn't it?
It did, actually, because her polling went
up.
She's now at 8%, I think, which is the highest that she's ever polled nationally. So people thought she did great from the early debate, and then people thought Rubio and Kasich did great in the primetime debate. Mm-hmm. Although Kasich didn't necessarily get a huge bump
from it
in the polling.
Well, everyone who was in the debate was already a fan of, like, everyone at the debate was already a fan of his.
Right.
And so he seemed like he was doing great because he was getting a lot of cheers.
Right.
But, like, I don't know that what he said connected with the Republican base. He was talking about taking Medicaid money and, like, not caring if gays get married and going to gay weddings. Like, that's...
People thought he did well because people were applauding for him.
Exactly.
But, like, that's not... That doesn't mean anything.
That doesn't mean anything in terms of the polls.
So NBC News did a poll post-debate about who won, and Carly Fiorina came in first at 22%, interestingly, because she wasn't
in the debate.
Debate. Right, exactly.
And that might be how you win a debate like this, P.S.
Yeah, exactly. But Trump at 18%, because everybody sort of thought he was an abject failure, at least in terms of, talking heads on television.
I think that what he said about corruption money connected with the people that wanted to hear that message.
Well, I think
that a lot of racists feel okay.
That's
about
what I was going to say. Like, I think that there are 20% of the... I think he's going to stay at the
20%.
Number that he's going to stay at. And when there are 17 people in the race, that's a recipe
for
potentially winning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean...
No, but I think that he has more than just the racist vote, because I think that there is this element that, like, Republicans vote based on fear. They're fearful of things. Like, they have similar problems to Democrats, obviously. It's not like Republican voters are, like, all wealthy people.
Right.
But they just...
Or it's not like in a job interview, they're like, by the way, what party do you vote
right.
for?
Right. They vote from a place of fear instead of a place of trying to fix things a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I think that Donald Trump, because he seems tough, and if they're not listening to the content that carefully, and they're vaguely racist, and they vaguely are worried about their job... That he sounds like a reasonable choice.
Well, it's
because
just,
he sounds tough on things.
And that's like demagoguery, though. It's just like he really likes, he like reaches out and he speaks to people.
Well,
and he's
also,
like, I'm going to be straight. Like,
he's
and that's
straight
why people
talking.
Love Chris Christie so
exactly.
much. They're both straight talkers.
The
totally.
People
yeah.
that love Chris Christie are loving Donald Trump, and they're loving him more because he's way more straight talking and way less insidery than Chris Christie.
Right. Well, and I think the thing that is... when you look at, so Trump had 18%, Cruz was pretty high up there too, and I didn't even, he seemed like a non-entity,
yeah.
and then he's supposed to be this great debater who went to Harvard and everything, but like, he was not, but he did well in the, who who won the debate. He was like at 13% or whatever. It seems like Republicans are really sort of like leaning to like a more protest candidate. Yeah. Because you didn't see Jeb Bush on that list of who won. Nope. You didn't see any of the governors on the list of people who won the debate.
Nobody who had any political tact was on
that. And that is because so many of the Republicans, and on some level, Democrats, I think, too, are sort of angry at the, like, political
class. I was going to say, we have the same phenomenon happening in the Democratic primary right now. Why is Bernie Sanders polling so outrageously highly?
Right.
The man is actually, like, a socialist candidate he's been running as a socialist. That doesn't have legs when you think about it in your mind. But when you think about how disenchanted everyone is with the political class, and to get the epitome of the political class as our candidate, I mean, it makes sense. And I think the same thing is happening here. Like, do the Republicans really, like the Republican voters who had to cover up for Bush and apologize for him so profusely, not apologize, but like they sort of had to cover up that whole era of history so quickly. Like, do they really want another Bush as their candidate? I don't think they do.
No, I don't
think they do. I feel like at this point, it's almost foolish to try to buy them off yet again after you've already failed colossally twice at being Bushes. Like, I mean, like, to have a one-term president and the agreed-upon worst president in modern history as the last two Bushes, like, this is not who they want. And so I feel like they have the same problem we have where, like, they have a dynasty candidate who's coming up. They don't want a dynasty candidate because they obviously... George Bush doesn't speak to their concerns. Those candidates are clearly about corporate concerns. No one has to even think twice about knowing that. Is Donald Trump about corporate concerns, even though he's openly about corporate concerns? Not really, because he's sort of just about whatever he feels like talking about at the moment. Like, even Ben Carson doesn't come off as being about corporate concerns.
No.
Is he paid for by corporate entities? Sure, he is, but that's not what he comes off as. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they have the same thing happening here that we have there, except they have so many more insane choices than we do.
Right, exactly. Well, and, you know, but to get to they've now polled the overall race. Like, who would you vote for? This was a new NBC poll. And this is...
Trump
went up. Bush went down. All of the, like, politicians went down. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at the people who are coming in 1 through 4 here, it's Trump at 23. Cruz is technically a politician, but he's a crazy one.
Right.
But then Carson and Fiorina and Rubio, that's the top...
Five.
I mean, that's mostly sort of, you know, candidates who are either non-politicians or people who are sort of like running against the establishment when you talk about
Cruz. This is a crazy list, by the way. To be the ones polling the highest.
That's the highest Fiorina's ever polled nationally, too, by the way, 8%. So she's going to be in the next debate, which will be fun.
We're talking, and these people are, by the way, polling higher than a man who has like a war chest of $98 million just sitting around waiting to be spent.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Jeb Bush has more money than God.
Yeah.
And like cannot seem to buy this election. Like, he needs some help from Bloomberg, I feel like. Bloomberg could teach him how to buy this election. He needs to buy an election. Don't need this child's play.
Yeah.
But if the man can't buy an election with all that money, then who is he even?
Right?
Like, you're not relevant if you...
In any case,
this week was not a great week, as we've already started to talk about, but we're going to continue talking about, for the GOP and ladies.
Well, Donald Trump...
I want to know what is a good week for GOP and ladies.
It hasn't been for years, by all means,
let me know.
When it happens, you will be our first call.
But we talked about Trump and Megyn Kelly getting into it on the debate stage, and then it sort of went on from there, because later... That night into the next day, Trump sort of was like sending out a bunch of tweets about Megyn Kelly. He like tweeted about how Megyn Kelly
bombed. He was really reinvigorated. The whole thing where he's like, well, if you don't think that I'm resonating with people, well, clearly look at the polls. Again, like the response of how well he did. And I was like, what?
Yeah,
how well
are you doing? And then he was in an interview then where he says, you could see the blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever.
Her hoo-ha. I was like, oh, got it. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, she was on the rag.
Yeah, clearly. Like, if she's saying all of these things, if she's being so defiant, so difficult.
Right, women are only difficult on their period.
Being so obstinate, it must be that part of the cycle. Yeah. Where that was happening, and the whole thing, his campaign manager was like, we'll gut her. We will gut her. Like, what?
Come on.
That was so frightening. I was like...
Okay. Yeah, and when people are talking about this being his Todd Akin moment, but it doesn't seem to be sticking the right way.
No. That's why I think there are a certain amount of people who are, most of his supporters, I think, are already there and don't care what he says and are sort of with him regardless of what he says, like, because of this. Like, yeah. His supporters are like, yeah, Megyn Kelly's on the rag. Like, that, you know what
well,
I mean?
Well, and
like,
he didn't apologize. He just decided, no. He doubled down and said that, basically said that anyone who was, who thought he was talking about Megyn Kelly's period is a deviant.
Right, because like, that's just, not actually what he said, but, like, obviously, like, that's what he was implying. Well, like, he and now he sort sure. of is just, like, he's blaming everyone else yeah. for it, which yeah. is, like, what he does. He won't apologize for anything.
I mean, if you just flash forward sort of in your mind, like, I see him flipping tables at state dinners. You know what I'm saying? Which sort of frightens me. Like, I just, he would be the Teresa Giudice of, like, of presidents.
That. Totally.
You know.
Well, and that is what, so, I mean, like, it's so interesting to me because, like, I was talking to somebody, I don't remember if it was you or whatever, but I was like, I, before the debate, I was like, I feel like Trump could really make the story of the post-debate, like, him actually acting presidential. Right. And I don't think that, I don't
he
think
doesn't
that
have
he
it in him.
I don't think that he has the ability. I really no. don't. I don't see it. I don't think that he
no,
can.
No, he's a megalomaniac, guys. Yeah, he is. He's doing what megalomaniacs do. Right. Remember when we wrote that long blog post about the guy who killed Garfield, President Garfield.
Oh, yeah.
Which was like a guy.
I was like, what's wrong with Garfield? Oh, that Garfield. What happened?
Yeah, who?
Where
yeah.
Who gets the last slice of lasagna? Uh-huh.
Who, like, slowly, is just like walking around town. He's like a sad story of a guy who just like was a crazy person who thought he like deserved, you know, a political appointment and then shot the president because he didn't get one, even though he'd done nothing to earn it. But, like, he basically turned his jail time into just being, like, a huge ham and, like, performing for the audience. Uh-huh. I feel like that's what's happening here. Like,
yeah.
the audience made him crazier. He was before yeah. that yeah. just a sort of eccentric guy. And yeah. as soon as he had the audience, he was, like, performing his testimony in soliloquies and singing his testimony, out. Calling out people in the audience for, you know, like, he made fun of his own defense team. Like, he sort of, like, grew with the cameras. And yeah. I feel like that's what Donald Trump has yeah. always been likely to do. He's a megalomaniac. That's what we know from the fact that he's had his own TV show.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we knew he was a ham. But, like, yeah. he's just sort of, like, going to grow with the cameras to be more outlandish and more crazy.
Yeah.
And somehow, I feel like the Republicans are sort of like, great. Okay, we'll do that.
Well, because it's weird, because this is not the first time he's run, but it's the first time that people have actually taken him seriously.
Well, it's the first time right. he got this far, too. Like, yeah. I mean, his level of, I don't know what made him think this was the year, but he's a genius, clearly, because this is the year. Yeah. But he's only ever really talked about running, and he's never actually jumped into a race fully.
Right.
And this is the first time he's done it, and he's being himself. The man is being honest. Guys, there's no, he is straight talking. We can't pretend that he's not straight talking.
Right.
I mean, he's not maybe highlighting some of his less glorious moments. He's not talking that openly about all of his many bankruptcies.
Yeah.
But, I mean, but he's being sort of like the boogeyman that we thought he would be, and people are going for
real
it
yeah.
anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
why, he doesn't need to apologize for
and
anything.
I remember, it's interesting, because I remember reading, like, even his daughter, who's, like, right hand, like, second in command, yeah. she's like, please stop talking about Mexicans, and, like, even issued an apology, but it's like, maybe you should actually try to address these people yeah. in a more respectful way. It's like,
no.
Pish-tosh. So, oh, okay, great.
But what's funny about that whole story with the Megyn Kelly thing is he has now been using it as a vehicle to talk yeah. about what Jeb Bush said this week, because Jeb Bush got himself into some trouble with women this week. Mm.
Jeb Bush too. Is an idiot. He's an actual stupid
Jeb
person.
Jeb! Exclamation yeah. point.
Yes, that's right.
Right, Jeb! Exclamation point is a stupid person.
Yeah, because he this week said, you know, went off the cuff, and he was like, "I'm not sure we need $500 million for women's health issues." Where I'm sure a lot of Republicans are probably like, well, you're right.
Right. Well, this because, is the
like,
amount they're is, talking about cutting from Planned Parenthood.
This was in regards to yeah. Planned Parenthood, actually, which we're going to get to right. next. But
which his grandfather was really big in establishing in and making right. sure,
yeah.
you know.
Yes, I know.
So right. I don't know if
we
the ghost of your grandfather
the Bushes for Planned Parenthood.
Right, exactly.
Degree, but sure, yeah. continue, Jeb. Exclamation point.
But, of course, everyone was immediately like, that was a gaffe, which right. it was, because you have now just sort of like pissed off 53% of the population, yeah. which is 6% more than Mitt Romney pissed off with his 47%
exactly.
conversation.
Yeah, binders, they're growing.
Women full of binders.
right. Yeah. So this is not good. Even yeah. the Republicans were like not
John McCormick at the
this.
National Review tweeted, isn't one benefit of an establishment candidate supposed to be that he's not going to make gaffes like this?
Yeah.
That's it, guys. It's that their establishment candidate is still making gaffes like this.
Yeah.
That's how someone who is a gaffe machine gets to be at the top of yeah. the polls.
But it's like you said, though, how are we shocked that the conservatives are not, you know, getting it right with women's
right.
issues.
Well, when have they ever?
They've never done it. Yeah.
And so now they're going to dig their heels in further, and they're planning to basically shut down the government in their quest to defund Planned Parenthood.
I mean, can
this
you
is like their latest,
believe this?
This is, I mean, bonkers town. I just... Yeah. This is like one of the times that I have to remember that they never play the long game correctly.
No. It makes... It, the last time that they shut down the government, which was over Obamacare, that on some level makes more sense to me than this. Which I know is... Neither of them make any sense.
Right.
But like, at least at the time that they were doing that, Obamacare nationally was like... Not polling so great.
Right.
But, like, Planned Parenthood, really, that's your plan now? Is
well,
to shut down the entire government?
In a presidential year?
Yeah.
Guys, that's not the time. It's not the right time.
Or when you're, like, sort of, you know, flaunting your successes as the governor of a state where there's an archetype called Florida Man, where it's like, Florida Man does da-da-da,
right.
Whereas things like, you know, smokes bath salts and da-da-da. We're like, maybe you're not really leading the way. No offense,
no.
But okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, so we're still on this dumb issue of these Planned Parenthood videos where they talk about donating fetal tissue
baby
and then
parts.
The GOP like was like, they're
was
selling
it?
Baby parts.
Was there was something, there was that conversation, I forget if it was like in the undercard. No, I feel like, was it Huckabee? Somebody said, or likened the baby parts that Planned Parenthood
was
allegedly selling, like
Buicks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
That's, which is a lie that's not actually what was going on.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yes, guys. Thanks. If you needed that clarified.
Yeah.
But so in any case, they voted on Monday to defund Planned Parenthood in the Senate. And they can vote on this until the cows come home. The president is going to veto it if it passes. Like this is not a thing.
Veto Corleone.
But so as we have talked about, I think before, they are now talking about trying to tie this to the next government funding bill. I think that whether or not we see a shutdown, a lot of people are saying it sort of depends on how well this issue ends up tracking in the next few months. Like, if people really pick up this discussion, then I think that they might do it. But for some reason, like, the Democrats have also sort of picked up that this could be something they champion. So I feel like this is another issue of, like, I worry a little bit about this one because I think the Democrats have less incentive to really dig their heels in for Planned Parenthood than they did for their own baby.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? I mean, that's a little bit worrying, and I think the Republicans know that, and that's probably why they're zeroing in on this.
Yeah.
But I think in a presidential year, to look like you're really standing up for women is, like, something that they're going to have to do to sort of distinguish themselves as a party. Mm-hmm. And so this is, like, the worst possible time to go full hog into something that is just about misogyny. Like, to highlight your levels of misogyny to this degree just seems bonkers. Because everybody knows that Planned Parenthood does more than provide abortions.
Yeah.
Everybody in the world knows that. And anyone who doesn't know that is about to know it.
They're about to know. Yeah,
that is what we'll find out.
Yeah.
So, like, this is going to look so bad.
Yeah.
Like, and it's going to be, like, tan-faced John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, like, daughtering Mitch McConnell, like, sitting there telling women that they shouldn't have health care.
Can't get health care. Right. Exactly. God bless
him. He can get a lot of tans, but we can't get health care.
Right.
It's fine.
Yeah.
In any case, there was also some controversy on the Democratic side regarding debates this
week. Going back to debates, the Democrats announced their schedule for debates, and they are really...
Or lack thereof.
Right, yeah.
They're going to have 6 debates. In 2008...
They had over 20.
We had almost 30. I think it was like 26 or 28 debates. So they are really sort of like... They're trying to shut this thing down, basically, because they feel like they've already got a candidate... And I think they also probably...
And they're worried.
On some level, they see
the writing on the wall.
Where her candidacy is going, which is not in a great place right now. I mean, she still may very well win, but it's not... I mean, it's... This has been a bad summer for her, basically.
Who's this
since
she
announced.
Of which she's...
I don't know her name.
Yeah. So, but they're only going to have 6 debates, and all of the other candidates are pissed, specifically Martin O'Malley, who really
came out...
firing in a way that
was
sort of shocking because outside of Hillary, he's the only person who's like a lifelong Democrat here because Sanders is an independent and the other two are former Republicans. So it's like, I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
So, but he was doing an interview with The Hill and he like came out firing. He said, there's an effort by a few insiders to try to limit the number of debates that we have, and I've shared with the chair, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, that I think it's a grave mistake, and I think it's undemocratic. It's all about trying to preordain the outcome, circle the wagons, and close off debate. If they could actually accelerate the debate of accelerate the date of the Iowa caucuses and hold them tomorrow, they'd like to do that. Then there'd be no campaign at all. that's what they'd really like.
P.S. They've stated that they'd really like that. Chuck Schumer said that months ago.
Right. So many people.
So many people have basically said that they don't want to have a primary.
Martin really equivocated on that statement. We don't know what he means. No, he's very to the point.
Right. So then he was asked as a follow-up question if the party insiders that he was discussing included the Clintons. And he said, of course they are. President and Secretary Clinton are the most colossal, prolific fundraising couple in the history of representative democracies. Oh. And so at this point, one of his aides came in and reminded him
that he was on the record,
and he said, I know.
That's like a real mic drop moment.
Right?
A real put your sunglasses on and walk out the door.
No, seriously, though.
He was like, yeah, I know.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, he wasn't planning to mic drop that at all.
Right, and Sanders right now, actually, because I got an email about this, he's trying to get everybody to sign a petition to have more debates. And
well, because this is not the only issue. We forgot to mention that not only are they only having six debates, but they're penalizing people who have debates outside of that structure.
Right.
So no one is allowed to participate in debates outside of the six.
Right. And so what I discussed.
Yeah, what are they going to do if all four of them have their own debate schedule?
The other four have nothing, you know, they have no ties to the DNC at this point. I mean, they should just go around having debates. Then what happens? Are they going to disclude all of the other candidates from the sanctioned debate. Debates.
Yeah. Wait, is Hillary Clinton just going to have a debate with herself because none of the rest are invited?
I mean, she's had enough opinions over the decades that she could debate herself if she wanted to.
So true. Oh,
yeah, I said
so
it.
True.
That's very Martin O'Malley of you.
Yeah, Brent, we're on the record here.
I know.
Yeah. But yeah, no, this is really... This is where I would like to see these protest candidates start to really... Get in there for it, right?
Yeah. Like,
because
band
this is not an acceptable.
They have nothing to lose by telling the DNC to go fuck off. I mean, they don't.
No, because the DNC has already made their decision clear. Like, there is not extra fundraising, and the DNC ultimately has to support who wins.
Right.
They can't decide that they don't like that candidate, so they'd rather have Marco Rubio be the president.
Well, and Martin O'Malley is polling at 0%, and the other three candidates aren't even really Democrats. Fuck the DNC.
Right, exactly. Right? What do they need the DNC for in this situation? And the DNC will run to the aid of whoever is going to win, ultimately. So this is just like an obnoxious thing that the sort of centrist Democrats have cooked up.
Yeah.
The corporatist Democrats, the Clinton wing of the Democratic Party, has cooked up this way because they control everything because they have all the money to cut off any actual voters from participating in this process. Yep. And that doesn't work out for them in the generals. We know that.
No, it doesn't.
We talk about this all the time.
Right. I mean, the last time that we had, where it was an open primary was in 2008, obviously, and there were 20-some debates, and those two, I mean, bloodied the shit out of each other, and we won that election going away. I mean, having a strong primary with a bunch of debates where we hear all of the people's ideas doesn't hurt anybody.
No.
It's a ridiculous notion to even think as such.
I know. It's just like they've never participated in an election before.
I know.
crazy.
Right.
It's like they've forgotten. Speaking of, Clinton and Sanders are in a statistical dead heat in New Hampshire right now.
Yeah.
New Hampshire's polling is getting more exciting by the moment.
I know.
Like, every time that we check it, they're, closer in the polls. And, at this point, she's polling at 42%. He's at 36%, but the margin of error is 6%. So they're within the margin of error. Like, this is just getting to be a bigger deal by the second. At this point, she really is actually having to worry about losing to him in New Hampshire.
And there's a few other signs in that polling that, are good signs for Sanders and bad news for her, too, because he is polling at 59% in terms of favorability or, likability, I guess, if you will, and she's at 54%, so he's actually
beating her. And her numbers, by the way, only go down when she gets more in public. Like, the more time she spends in public, the more her favorability ratings go down.
Right, because she reminds people that...
They didn't like her before. Right. That's how you lose an election in 2008.
My favorite, just to go back, was that when I was sitting watching the debate and I got an email from her campaign that was I'm not watching the debate. Yes. Right. Amazing. One, amazing. Two, it's because she was hanging out with the Kardashians. And I was like, oh, yes, right. I'm just like, what's happening right now? That selfie.
Yeah.
That's
so good. Yeah.
She's trying.
She looked pretty good in that selfie.
She looks really good.
Well, the Kardashians know how to take a good selfie.
That's true. They do.
They're not afraid.
And she was wearing, I think, an orange like Nehru-esque jacket, yeah. which really, you know, brightened up her her color wheel.
But also, the other thing that's interesting is that only 20% of New Hampshire voters say that they have definitely made up their mind about a Democratic candidate. And you and I have talked about this a lot. Any place where, because Iowa polls similar to this a lot of times too. If you haven't made up your mind, you're not voting for
her. Right. The reason you haven't made up your mind is because you don't really want to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Right, because if that's,
you already know, you've known she was running for the last 16 years.
It's like when you don't commit to brunch plans because you feel like other brunch plans might be
yeah. Yeah, this is a phenomenon Angelinos know really
well. Exactly, right. Yeah. Like, you know whether you're voting for Hillary Clinton or not.
You know that you have the option to do that and you've known it.
So the
She's not your choice if you...
Right. So the other 80% of New Hampshire voters are either going to vote for Bernie Sanders, they're going to vote for Martin O'Malley, they're going to vote for potentially Joe Biden if he gets into the race, who actually polls third. Here, I didn't put that on there because he was a distant third.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's polling higher than the other three candidates who are running.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that, that's also bad news for her, too, because like she's not going to further convince party base voters whether they should vote for her or not.
She's
because
had
they know
this
already.
Last 2 years to herself in the election cycle.
Right.
And so, anyone who has not been convinced.
Well, the last eight.
Or the last eight, really. But I mean, the last 8 years have been Clinton having the election cycle to herself.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Like, everyone knows. Like,
you're not what confused about whether you're going to vote for her or not.
Right.
You are or aren't. And you know already.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we have another Black Lives Matter protest at a Sanders rally.
Yeah.
In Seattle.
Second time.
Second time now.
Although, the first time I would say that it really happened to Martin O'Malley, but Bernie Sanders
just happened to be there.
He's in second place, so that's who we're talking about, and nobody cares about Martin O'Malley. But
this actually happened directly at a Bernie Sanders rally in Seattle.
The more I think about it, the more I think actually the reason that it's happening at a Bernie Sanders rally is because he's the only Democrat who is having a rally that any humans are at.
Well,
because
that's
Hillary
true.
Clinton is not going in public.
Right.
And
no one else can draw a crowd.
Nobody is going to a Martin O'Malley rally, so you're left with Bernie Sanders rallies.
Yeah. Right, well, and this is the only crowd that they could potentially get the members of the crowd to talk about this issue too.
The only crowd, A, but I think B, the only candidate that you could see really opening up to and being vocal about in the way that gets you really worked up. Like, I know the points that everyone goes back and they're like, listen, clearly he is gung-ho and supportive and behind this demographic because, you know, walked with MLK and da-da-da. Right. And you know, like, he is the kind of person out of all of these candidates, the one who does have your interests in mind.
Right.
But I can understand, like, the concept of we need to hear more from him. We need to hear more from him.
Well, this is what we talked about after the NetRoots protest, because remember, we at first were sort of like, ugh, rude, and then the next week I had done nothing but think about it.
Yeah.
And so I was sort of like, actually, super effective, because everyone's talking about it.
Well, and
this is getting more effective.
Well, and I was actually, after that, because I watched that NetRoots thing, and I was actually sort of like really angry at the time, because I was like, let the man speak.
Right.
But
I
think that I am starting to get it a little bit more here, because like, you know, the progressives aren't, you know, they have a broad message that I think at least will sort of, you know, positively affect the African-American community, just in terms of, you know, sort of like when they're talking about income inequality and things like that. But like, they do need to do a better job of speaking specifically to the issues that that the Black Lives Matter community cares about. And like, they're not doing it yet, and they need to be doing it. So while, yes, I'm sort of like mad that they're doing it to Bernie Sanders because he's my guy.
Right.
But, like, I get it.
Well, and also you get, like, as Kim is saying, like, he's the one who could potentially be trusted to
talk
about
this. Where if there's
this.
Anyone to, like, actually get worked up and upset. And the thing is that since that whole NetRoots situation, like, Martin O'Malley has actually sort of taken the lead on, let me sit down with these leaders, let me do all of this.
He released his plan on prison reform. Right. Sanders hasn't done that yet.
Right.
I'm assuming that he probably will.
Do that. And overall, I think Bernie Sanders would have the most ability to work this into his sort of current view. Like, he is talking about one kind of inequality. Like, when we talked, you know, the week before, and I was talking about how one thing I don't want to see is, like, sort of, I want to see all inequalities addressed as separate but related issues. So, like, right. income inequality is still a type of issue that needs to be talked about, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't address everything that talking about racial right. equality well, or gender should, equality
you should
talk
be
about.
Able to you talk have to about be able those things concurrently.
Exactly.
Like, you
and he's
you
someone
shouldn't be shouting down income inequality to talk about, you know, racial inequality.
Right. right. But if you but can, you but can, he's somebody who could talk about both because he already both. Has an inequality right. related message.
Right. Right.
And none of the other candidates are talking about any kind of inequality.
Well, and I think that he is about to start talking about yeah. both in a more sort of like full-throated manner because Agreed. Later that day in Seattle, after this basically his you know rally got shut down, right. he had a huge rally of 12,000 people, which is actually the largest that anybody has had. He keeps sort of like racking up yeah. the numbers of how many people are coming.
Well, that's
he,
what they're doing because they're coming to LA, right. and that's probably, I'm sure that's their plan
I'm going.
To go.
You tomorrow.
Yep.
Are you coming?
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to make yes. it happen. We're going to make it happen.
I can't.
Yeah.
Go, guys. Yeah, I feel like I'm missing everything.
But,
agreed. I think a lot of this has relied on inference where it's kind of like, well, you know where he stands. He doesn't have
right.
to say it because you know he's thinking
right,
it.
But he does have to say it.
But he should have to say it because that's
well,
the whole
also,
thing where it's like this whole concept of, yeah, we know where most people are in their hearts where it's like people aren't racist, but it's like people need to know that
enough.
This is not enough.
Yeah.
And the whole
right.
thing is to say, yes, income equality is a huge deal and try and separate and distinguish that, you know, racism or things like that don't influence income equality. It's like, that's absurd. And to just say, if you're just speaking purely from a political standpoint, which, I mean, he's not a politician's politician, and that's one of the reasons why I love him. But if you're just speaking purely from the numbers side, it's like, listen, this is the constituency that comes out hardcore
yeah.
for the Democratic vote.
Yeah.
Every single year, at least every 4 years, so hopefully
someone's
every 2 years,
someone's
really
talk
hopefully,
to them.
Hopefully sometime every yeah. year, but for the most part, absolutely every 4 years, you cannot win without them.
No.
You need
no.
to speak to them
no.
and say, I hear you, like, I hear that this, you know, this economy is hitting your pockets, but I also hear that you as a person who is now an equal citizen in this nation,
yeah.
there are other things that are clearly affecting you in
yeah.
ways that...
Right.
is, you know, ways that are not affecting
well,
other people.
And I
people.
Think it's important to note, too, that, I mean, look at how... It's great that we're talking about this, too, because, like, it's been, you know, it's now been a... Today is the,
right, the
anniversary
of Michael Brown.
When Michael Brown was killed, which sort of, you know, spawned the Black Lives Matter movement, and it's come a long way, which is great.
Yeah.
And it's a new
and
movement.
It's finally,
you and I sort of, like,
influencing
talked about
presidential
this
politics,
yeah.
which is...
And that's,
well, they're being very creative about how they approach publicizing this issue, which is, I think, important and interesting. I think that's exciting that it's, like, younger activists who are kind of thinking... They're not... Because they haven't sort of been, you know, through this the political cycle a zillion times before, they don't sort of have their, you
yeah.
know, their people that they go to and their things that they do and the people they lobby and the people they don't and they buy people off and people buy them off and whatever. Like, they are just sort of disrupting in an effort to, like, create a conversation. And they're
right.
doing it very
it's
effectively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
And they have been this whole time. I mean, that's every step of the Black Lives Matter movement has been, like, really effective. They've,
yeah.
they've been very, really good at starting conversations that
yeah.
that we were not having a year ago.
Right.
No.
Right. Where it's like, clearly these activists are not saying, we don't want you to talk, but it's like, talk about things that matter
right.
and
yeah.
make sure
exactly.
that you're appealing to all the people who ultimately will come out for
yeah.
you.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that we got a big clue to the fact that Sanders is going to start talking about that
mm-hmm.
because at that 12,000 person rally that he had later in the day, the person who introduced him was his newly hired,
right.
who had not been
right, his new press secretary.
His new
yeah,
press secretary, who is, she's the national, she's a young sort of activist, and she's the national youth chair of the Coalition on Juvenile Justice, which is a nonprofit that focuses on appropriate care of American youth in the justice system, and she has worked a lot on sort of, you know, prison reform and things like that. And she also has, like, close ties to this movement, actually.
Right.
So I think that, and she is also personally speaking on behalf of him in regards to how he is going to be good on these issues. He's also added a new tab to his website about this, too, like,
Fantastic.
Talking about, like, all this. So, like, he's listening, which
yeah.
I think is the point. Like,
yeah.
that's what you want.
Well,
like,
that's, we had
if
said
he
before,
wasn't listening, then that would, you know, be a failure
yeah.
on his part. But, like, he is sympathetic, obviously,
this is just,
to this. So,
this
like,
is, he's from Vermont. He's from a state that is 95% white.
Right.
He has not had to talk about these issues in years. So
no.
it was just, like, not something that he was... necessarily, like, even thinking about. Because in Vermont, right. income inequality is the inequality. Mm-hmm. right. Because everyone's white. And, like, yes. you know, like, I think that in this is sort of an opportunity to kind of educate him on what it is to be a broad appealing candidate. Because he was coming into this race as a fringe candidate. Yeah. He never thought he would have to run a broad campaign, I'm sure.
No, I'm
so,
sure
like,
not.
In order, and this is a sign, I think, that he is someone who's being taken seriously as a broad candidate. And that there is sort of, like, a yep. chance for him to kind of, like, affect, yep. you know, to sort of, like, take on a larger sort of yeah. role in speaking about a more kinds of inequality. But I think right. it's ultimately sort of, like, it's sort of a flattering sign that, yeah, that exactly. he's relevant.
Yeah. Right. And, yeah.
Oh, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, that's, well. I think, a great thing. And, but, so, in any case, she was talking on Meet the Press as well, this new press secretary yeah. for Bernie Sanders.
Oh, no, he said this on Meet the Press.
Oh,
she said that this
she
was
had
a,
said,
something that she had told him,
she
basically.
She had told and Bernie Sanders something on Meet the Press. Yeah. We have a quote here that is from her, which is basically about what we have been talking about yeah. how economic inequality is an yeah. issue, but that there are elements of racial inequality that are not just about the economy, that yeah. are about the fact that if you're, like, black in America, you just get treated differently, and that yeah. is separate from, you know, that he needs to kind of, like, be able to address both,
yeah.
which mm-hmm. is, I think, what he's going right. to hopefully try to do.
Yeah.
You'll let me know at his LA rally that That's I right. will not be able to.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
I'm like, this is going to be like a day of massive depression for me, by the way. It's like the day that I missed the Obama inauguration. And I just like, I felt, I was in LA and I, all of my friends were there. And I just like felt sad all day. And I was yeah. like, it's a great day. I feel terrible. I'm like, I hate missing these
also,
moments.
Also, I'm, not to further rub it in, but I'm going to see Bernie Sanders twice in 1 week.
Oh, yeah.
Where
you're going to see him in Iowa.
I'm seeing him at the Iowa State. He's going to be at the Iowa State Fair on Saturday. I'm going to be there on Saturday. I'm going to see him, and I'm going to see Lincoln Chafee, and I'm going to see Rick Santorum. Is it weird, guys, that I'm
most
more
excited about Rick
to get a picture with Rick Santorum than I am with Bernie Sanders? I just think that that's going to be really fantastic.
It's going to be a picture that you can cherish forever.
That right?
The namesake of the Santorum.
The last time I was at the Iowa State Fair, it was to see Color Me Bad. And I would have to say that I was a little bit more excited about that. But I was also like 9 years old at the time.
Last time I was at the Iowa State Fair, I got some pretty... Oh, I got my picture with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. The Iowa State Fair.
Last and a fanny there. Pack.
Why is the right. Iowa State Fair like...
It's where you go.
Where it's at.
That's where I you know. Go. That's where you go to meet politicians.
And I just missed Steve King.
I'm sure you would have turned it out. Left. I'm sure we would have seen Brent on YouTube yeah. with several million yeah. hits.
Oh, I got a picture with Tom Harkin, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Brent really made the rounds. Him and his fanny pack really made the rounds.
Ate some fried butter.
Yeah.
It did all the things.
Did all the things. you'll post about it on our Grand Just Live yeah. pages, yeah. so you guys can yeah. follow him.
One more thing on Bernie Sanders before we get off the topic.
Yes.
He's going to Liberty University,
this is genius.
You guys.
Oh, Lord.
Okay. What?
I have thoughts. I often do.
I
think that this is genius.
Yeah.
Because, I mean... I think that he is the only person who in the Democratic campaign who in the primer who could obviously do this. But I think it's because he is going to be able to talk about the ways in
the
which
the old Jew.
He's going to be able to talk about the ways in which his political philosophy jibes really well with Christian morality. And the things that they are supposed to believe. Obviously, the Liberty University people don't actually believe that they
might not take him up.
Are we going to bust out, like, Birkenstocks Jesus?
No, but I mean, like, he's the only one...
He hung out with prostitutes.
Yeah.
He's the only one that has a message that, like, he could have reverberate with the far right.
He'd like them to be able to go to school for free.
Exactly.
That's what
no,
like.
I mean,
he can sell that.
The far right and the far left meet somewhere on a continuum, and I think that just as the Tea Party has been ripe for the picking by the far left this whole time, I think these are people that are ripe for the picking. This is not the sort of like, this is not the corporate elite that he's going to speak to. Mm-hmm. He's going to talk to people who are having some stupid thoughts on a daily basis because they're at Liberty University and they have no choice. But like, ultimately, he's going to talk to people that would benefit from his message, you know?
And they're going to be there, too, because this is... He's speaking...
They're required
like
to go. The convocation.
Which is... Right, that's where Ted Cruz went, because he often likes to tout that he has had, like, the biggest, you know, campaign event, like, of the Republicans, but that's because it was at Liberty
University.
It was
mandatory.
That's
what
Bernie Sanders is going to
exactly.
be. Like, 12,000 people are going to be there. But, like, he is going to join the list of people who are speaking in the fall of Ben Carson, Louie Gohmert.
Relevant Louie Gohmert.
The Heritage Foundation President Jim DeMint,
former senator.
And Duck Dynasty stars Corey and Sadie Robinson. Mm. So he's really, it's a
illustrious company.
Yes. Yeah.
It's going great. Meanwhile, yeah. Chuck Schumer almost won the week by coming out against gun violence after
Amy Schumer, his cousin, most popular person in America, teamed up
on a gun violence, you know, press conference.
But then he screwed it up later in the week.
Because he came out against the Iran deal.
Who's shocked?
Our next Senate majority leader or minority leader, or maybe not. I mean, if I were the Democrats, I would
dump his ass. They're already saying that because he came out against it. He said he's the only Democrat who's come out against it so far. 15% have come out for it. There are people who have not said what they're going to do. He has a long history of being nuts on Middle East policy issues. Absolute banana pants nuts.
He's a warmonger.
Right. He claims that he decided to support the agreement or to not support the agreement due to the fact that he was concerned that it would strengthen Iran's economy and that it would ultimately not prevent the country from developing a nuclear bomb.
Now, interestingly, what also won't prevent them from doing that is doing nothing.
Not having this deal. Right.
Right. Exactly. So we're between a rock and a hard place, Chuck Schumer.
Sure. Yeah. And he claims that he's not going to actively try and convince other Democrats to not vote for it. Like, this is just, like, his own position. But, like, still, the White House is, as we have talked about before, like, is really coming out sort of, like...
Also...
They're taking no prisoners on
this
here,
announcing this is him trying to convince other Democrats to do it.
Totally.
Yes.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
If he wanted to just secretly do it, he could have just voted no, and we would have been like, that's weird,
exactly.
Chuck Schumer voted no. This is him trying to convince other Democrats to do it.
But the White House immediately, like, sort of, like, came out and said... Screw you, Chuck Schumer, which is interesting, as
someone
you said,
has needed to say that for a long time.
Soon. Yeah, but they sort of like tried to marginalize him, and they cited his position for the Iraq War in 2003 as part of like his longstanding tendency to disagree with Obama on foreign policy and like his use of
warmongering, aka warmongering.
Right.
He's a pro warmongering politician.
Right.
He always has been.
But the White House Press Secretary, Josh Earnest, said that it's not particularly surprising to anybody here at the White House, even if it is disappointing. And then went on to say that maybe
Schumer is not the right fit for party leadership.
He said members may want to consider the voting record of those who want to lead the caucus, which is a pretty bold statement, I think, actually, like because he is going to take over for Harry Reid, in theory, and like... You know,
if he goes up against the party on a major piece of Democratic legislation like this, that's not it.
Yeah.
That's not the plan.
Well, he's awful. So.
He's awful.
Moving on.
Moving on.
We don't like him.
We don't like him. We're not Chuck Schumer people here.
I couldn't tell. Gotta know.
Chuck Schumer, who famously was the first person to talk about not wanting no one to primary Hillary. He tried to convince everyone to not run so that we wouldn't have a primary
really
and we could just move straight to the general.
He really does.
He's getting grumpier and older in his advancing age.
Yeah.
He used to be like, he was never reasonable, but he was slightly more reasonable.
He also looks scary. He's got like that scary
getting,
look.
He's getting scarier looking.
Yeah. He looks angry all the time.
Yeah. No, he went from looking just sort of like smug all the time to looking like kind of grumpy all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it is a curious thought because you think you're like, well, so the options are diplomacy or war.
Right.
Well, that's
how the president is framing
that's
it right now,
what
too,
he
but.
Wants, though.
Yeah.
He is one of those senators who wants to go to war in the Middle East. He thinks that war makes Israel safer. War does not make Israel safer. We've proven this time and again.
Right.
Like, we shouldn't have to go through this anymore. It's people like him that are the reason that Hillary Clinton has this blemish on her voting record where she voted for the Iraq War.
Yeah.
She was a senator for New York State at the time, just like Chuck Schumer, and she was drawn into that thinking where she had to support this base that is, you know, so super pro-Israel that they want to go to war all the time in the Middle East, and it's going to follow her for the rest of her life. It cost her the presidency last time. I mean, it's... And this is from the Chuck Schumer caucus.
Yeah.
So that's where politicians end up when they follow Chuck Schumer down a hole.
I mean, and meanwhile, regardless, it's like the people who are very apolitical, like the think tanks, just like the wonks who are like looking at this. And granted, it's not a perfect deal, but they're like, this is a
pretty good,
really impressive deal.
Yeah, right?
Where you're like, wait, they did... Give up all of these things. They made all of these concessions.
Well,
how did you convince them to do that?
Well, and that's what John Kerry has been saying, too. Like, he talks about sort of, like, there's no unicorn deal where it's
we just get everything we want and they get nothing.
If we get everything we want and they get nothing, then they don't sign on to that. That's not a deal anymore.
Right. Yeah. Like, that being said, pretty darn close. They were oh, yeah, well, you can't have this in... Oh, okay, well, yeah, we'll get rid of that enriched uranium. Okay, yeah. Well, you're going to have to let all of our, you know, like, UN checkers come in and, like, yeah. just monitor... Okay, great. Yeah, sure. You're like, that. Wait, what?
Yeah, totally.
What else do you guys want?
So, a federal appeals court struck down that insane Texas voting law. Do you remember this? Where they basically just wanted to...
Stop voting from happening in Texas anymore. Yeah, exactly. They wanted everyone to... present their firstborn in order to get the chance to vote.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's apparently not legal.
Oh.
One of the most conservative appeals courts in the country unanimously decided that was a no-go.
That's
in
when
an opinion
you know.
Written by a George Bush appointee.
Oh, that's when you know.
That's it.
That's the
you
sign.
You did it wrong.
You've crossed a line when that's happening for you. Like, even the Supreme Court usually goes 5-4 or something.
Right,
like, you can't,
exactly.
You can't...
No.
You can't be having a conservative court unanimously striking down your law.
Yeah, exactly. But it was great because it happened one day before the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act.
Oh, yeah, because that was this week.
Yeah, which they have been really trying
Happy
to...
Happy anniversary,
I mean,
by the way.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, totally. But they've been chipping away at this for 50
they're trying.
years.
Right.
Or trying to.
And by they, basically. Even the Supreme Court.
I know.
Right,
yeah,
has been trying to chip
absurd.
Away.
Absurd,
yeah.
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 So, no, that's good news, everyone.
Some positive news going into...
Yeah.
The
wind on a high
season.
Note until you don't.
I know. Oh my gosh.
Here's our one non-electoral politics news
pretty much.
Item of the week.
The Stonewall Trailer.
The Stonewall Trailer hit internets.
Yeah.
A fine work of fiction.
Very fine work. I know. I was like, I texted Lila at like an hour after this came out because like I was like, is your gay Facebook really blowing up about this? She was like, my gay Facebook, my black Facebook,
all of my Facebooks. All of them.
Well, my many books.
Aside from my gay Facebook, it's like my Vince Ramos Brigade Facebook that does all the political reporting.
Your what? What's that
That my Solidarity Brigade to Cuba Facebook.
To Cuba, right.
So they're radical on everything.
Your what?
So, that's my Facebook. That Facebook will keep you busy on any number of issues.
Yeah.
They all posted about this for a variety of reasons.
Yeah. It appears to be about as historically correct as, I don't know.
10,000
BC. Roland, the other historical film that Roland Emmerich has done, by the way. Yeah. But Roland Emmerich directed it. You
I mean,
remember
but to be
it
fair...
From,
recorded history did not exist in 10,000 BC.
We don't know if that was accurate.
Yeah, we don't know.
You know, he's from of Independence Day fame, basically.
Yeah.
And Stargate.
As I said, I'm sure Eight-Legged Freaks is more accurate. It's more realistic.
Yeah. This is basically...
He's gay.
Right.
And this is
he describes
this
as a labor of
love.
Love letter to himself.
Whitewashing love.
Yeah. So that's the thing. If you don't know, you know, the Stonewall riots happened in 1969 in New York City, and they were largely perpetrated by, you know, the transgender community, African-Americans.
Downtrodden, very subjugated.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. And that is not what it looks like is happening in this trailer.
It looks like... polite Midwestern people
are
having a riot
it's about
together.
A white Midwesterner, you know, who moves to New York City, gets caught up in the gay rights movement. becomes the hero of the gay rights movement while everyone else sits idly by and watches.
Yeah, exactly. As I explained it, I said, Ryan Phillippe's perm from 54 moved to the big city and started gay rights.
Totally.
Is basically what this
That's
trailer
exactly
would suggest.
What it looks like.
So,
but people were immediately incensed about this.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. all
Well, this
of the...
is such weird timing to have something like this hit, I was going to say newsstands, not newsstands, news sites.
Yeah.
Because we're really talking about transgender rights and issues at the moment. So, like, there's already sort of an awareness that there's more to sort of like a non-conforming, more to non-conforming society than just gay men. You know, like we're like finally talking about a lot of these other aspects of the LGBT community that haven't really been getting a lot of discussion in the HRC era.
Right. We talk about
this the HRC era. Yes.
Sure. We talk about LGBT issues, but we rarely talk about.
But we
T
talk
issues.
About them as they pertain to like white gay men a lot of the time, because that's who's sort of at the forefront of these issues and is in bed with a lot of the big politicians on these issues, like. This is sort of an interesting time. I mean, I think that 10 years ago, no one would have noticed that this was so offensive.
No, well, the film probably wouldn't have been.
Right.
So I guess
right.
on
well,
some
that's
level,
true.
It's great
well,
that we're making that.
But
I mean
I think that no one would have even noticed because it wouldn't have even been on anyone's radar to think that that was something that was sort of like
a story that needed to be told.
A story that needed to be told.
Yeah.
And I think that this is sort of like kind of short-sighted because it happened at the worst possible time to release a sort of like whitewashing history of the gay rights movement, because we're finally talking about the gay rights movement like it's not just about white men.
Right. Yeah.
For like the first time ever.
Well, I mean, and the thing is, you would sort of recognize that you've always had this concept of the like white cisgender male. I mean, you could say more broadly white people, but more specifically white cisgender male. They always stand in for like the universal, where it's like everyone can sort of project, where it's like, oh, maybe I could still, for one reason or another, see myself in this person and therefore get carried along for the ride. Yeah. But it's kind of like we're getting to a point where that just doesn't suffice for a lot of people.
That's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But a lot of, you know, there are tens of thousands of people who have signed petitions online to boycott the film. Yeah. And like a lot of, like you said, a lot of, you know, organizations have come out again, like LGBT organizations have come out, you know, against this and called for boycotts and stuff like that. Roland Emmerich had to release a statement on talking about like how, you know, all of the people who like were heroes of the Stonewall riots, who
like
were
in
actually,
the movie,
they are
and supportive of this. Right. This is kind of like when Cameron Crowe had to write, you know, it was like, well, Aloha was my love letter to Hawaii, and please ignore that Emma Stone
that is not Asian, for Asian
person. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
You know, it's kind of like that. But.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's
blowing up the interwebs right now.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it is. I mean, is it really good? Is it going to be good anyway? Aside from that, I mean, is there a chance that it's, good? I hope it is,
The people who are not caught up in, like, seeing the more important issues, like, the problematic concerns with this are like, I mean, it's very cinematic and it's very sweeping, and you see these people who are, like, you know, just have been pushed to a point, like backed into a wall, and they're like, we're not going to take it anymore. And everybody loves a good story like that. So I'm sure that people will turn out for
that.
But people who are like sort of aware of the context, and the only thing that is really upsetting, because a lot of the excuses and arguments have been like, well, people wouldn't make this movie. Like, studios wouldn't touch it. And I understand where it's interesting. Roland Emmerich has, like, huge clout. He has lots of money. He has the ear of lots of producers and lots of studios.
Totally.
And apparently people just wouldn't touch it. So a lot of this came from his own money, things like that.
Yeah, he claims
and
he's been trying to make this movie for a long time.
Right. Yeah. But the thing is, you're like, if you're going to make this movie, you would hope that someone would make it right, especially in the context of this time, this day and age in which we're living, and you realize that people are literally dying because they are not seen as equal human beings. So the fact that you can't at least give them the credit for being the vanguard of this movement that allowed you to be who you are in society is infuriating.
So, well said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
You did.
You said the thing that had to be said.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is, I think, going to be a sort of fascinating release when it finally gets released. Yeah. I'm very curious to see what happens.
Because if the gays aren't going to see it,
who's seeing that movie?
Who are we left to go see that movie? I'm not sure anyone.
When is that coming out? They're like, well, this Marvel movie was sold out, so honey, are you into it? Stonewall? That sounds good. Like Stonewall Jackson. Yes. And they get duped and they walk in. They're like,
wait a minute.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And in final news, it was Jon Stewart's last week.
Yeah, goodbye, Jon Stewart.
Hashtag Jon Voyage.
That was
trending,
I love that. That's good.
Yeah.
So that's just in time for what promises to be an even better election cycle than 2008.
I know.
Indecision was the bad. Maybe so he'll come back for Indecision. Maybe he'll come back if he's not running himself. You know, all those people who are like, what are we going to do without Jon Stewart? Like, they're literally, you feel like they can't go on.
Yeah.
So they're sort of holding out for, like, hope.
He had such broad appeal, you know? And, I hope Trevor Noah does a good job. I don't see why.
Well, he's hot AF, as the kids say.
Totally is.
You know.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Hi. But, you know, I mean, the thing about Jon, you know, my parents watch The Daily Show.
Exactly.
You know? And I just don't, and maybe Trevor Noah will have that appeal, and maybe he will sort of, like, carry on in this way.
He's very young to have that kind of appeal. His style of comedy is a little younger.
Although Jon Stewart's been doing this for, what, like, 16 years or something like that? So he was young at the time, too.
Was young, but he was not quite as young, and his style of comedy was not quite as young.
Yeah.
Remember when there were all those controversies about tweets that Trevor Noah had tweeted or whatever? Jon Stewart wasn't sort of in a position to get into that kind of trouble.
Yeah.
He was just sort of like a failing stand-up comedian. Well, that was
the thing where it's like, who knows, had he actually been around during the advent?
Well, right, of course. Yeah. You don't have, there's no, he might there's be no just way.
Scrutinized.
Exactly.
We have no
I'm
way
sure,
of knowing.
I'm sure he would have been. I mean, that's, but there's no sort of comparable way to start a project like this and give it broad appeal because everyone sort of grew up with Jon Stewart doing it.
Right.
Because Craig Kilborn did it not as well.
That's true.
Oh,
wow. Right now. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
But we now, you know, neither him or Stephen Colbert have those. Stephen Colbert is going to be on in the fall, but I mean, I don't think that it's probably going
to
have.
This may be controversial. I don't think it will be. I wanted Chris Rock to just do it for the year.
Oh, just I for know the election you said that for the election. Mm. I know that would have been.
That was,
really
I think,
good.
Maybe even discussed.
I like
that.
Oh. Yeah.
But that would have been.
That would have been perfect.
I want a sort of like
he's the best social commentator
on this election year.
He has really come around in the past couple years and in being incredibly vocal in the way that. Not just his fans, but other people are listening. Yeah. You're like,
totally.
You have a
brand. And he's been so articulate about issues that he is talking about. So this is, I know, he would have been so great.
Yeah.
Well,
anyways, bye, Jon Stewart.
Bye, Jon Stewart. Jon Voyage. And we will be back not next week because Brent's going to be in Iowa. You're going to hear from him.
That's right.
At the state fair.
That's right.
And then we'll be back after that.
Are you reporting live?
Well, I'm going to try. I'm not going to have live reports because we don't have that ability.
No.
But I'm going to be tweeting and I'm going to try and take some audio. I'm going to go to the Sanders headquarters. My parents were there this week, and and of course my mom loves to tell everybody about the podcast, and so she doesn't listen to it, but she likes to tell everybody. Sorry, mom. But I think I'm going to go interview someone at the Sanders headquarters in Iowa.
Yeah,
they told me I could, so they're probably looking for...
Oh, you've already reached out. You have a contact.
No, do it.
Yeah. This is very expressive. Look at you.
We'll see. I'm going to try and get as much from Iowa as I can.
Good.
Because now's the only time you want to go there.
Exactly.
State fair time, pre-election.
It's pre-election. Like,
that's when you go to Iowa.
That's when Iowa really shines.
Yeah. Right.
In any case... Thank you, Kim, for coming.
Yeah,
thank you for having me.
We'll have you back soon.
Next time, you're going to be our post-debate.
Oh, duh.
Yeah, you'll be our post-debate
correspondent.
That's
right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we can give you a correspondent title.
Ooh.
It'll be great.
Looking forward to it.
In any case, we'll be back in 2 weeks with news.
My updates
with
from the fair.
News from the fair.
Yeah.
And hopefully more exciting election bungles.
That's right.
Bye.
Talk to you then.
Bye.